Ed that needs no introduction to most of our listeners, but just in case there are one or two of you out there who've been living on a different planet, Michael Medved is both a film critic and host of a syndicated daily three-hour talk show on pop culture and politics. He is as friendly on the air as he is articulate, as he is brilliant. He treats his guests with respect, but, you know, once in a while, I hear somebody call in so puffed up with opinion, a caller whose ignorance is matched only by his arrogance, and I honestly feel sorry for the guy, because he's never going to know what hit him. Mr. Medved gently, skillfully articulates the facts with a brain that would be the envy of any computer hard drive, and the poor arrogant caller never knows what hit him.
Thank you very much. That's nice of you to say, and I'm glad you didn't hear the other times when it didn't work out so well.
Well, Michael has written a book, a new book called Right Turns, and I'd like to talk with you today, Michael, about that book. But before I do, you're going to be at the Jewish Community Center today at 6:30?
Yeah, right after I get through speaking to Bob and Sharon right here on KPRZ, I'm going over to another part of La Jolla, and which is it's on
Executive Drive.
Executive Drive.
4126 Executive Drive.
Thank you, 4126. And I'll be there from 6:30 to 9. Admission is free. There's some confusion about this. Admission is free. Books aren't free. But there is no such thing as a free book, but there is such a thing as a free book signing, and this is one. And I sure would be delighted to meet everybody. We're going to be talking a little bit, answering questions, signing books, and there will be refreshments.
It's wonderful. You know, Michael flew out here just to be on our radio show. And while he was here, we said, Michael, why don't you do a book signing?
Right, so absolutely.
Very nice of you to be willing to tag this other thing along.
Well, if I had known it was such beautiful weather, I flew down to Seattle, which is where I live, was grim and rainy today. You'll be shocked
what
to hear.
What else is new? Yeah.
And, well, it's January. Yeah. But to come down here, and, boy, the city was glistening when the plane landed at Lindbergh Field just a little while ago.
It's a beautiful city to fly into.
That's wonderful. I grew up here.
That's right, you did.
Yeah,
what part
I did.
Of town did you grow
in
up
in? Point Loma.
In Point Loma.
Yeah, I went to Loma Portal Elementary. All of this is in my book, Right Turns, by the way. But we actually have a picture, a rather amusing picture, of my brothers and myself when we were little kids in Point Loma. And I went to Dana Junior High School and for 1 year at Point Loma High School right here locally.
Wow.
And then to Palisades.
Right. And then my parents did the ultimate act of child abuse. I've often said the best way to get on Oprah is to say that you were abused by your parents when you were a kid.
Let's write this down, Sharon.
No, I mean, you have to talk about this horrible, horrible abuse. The big, horrible abuse that my parents did to me was they moved when I was a junior in high school from San Diego to L.A.
That qualifies for a junior, for sure.
That is huge. I am with you. That sounds very abusive.
Well, it's terrible because I think everybody, right now I have a daughter who's a junior in high school. And when you're a junior in high school, you're so comfortable with your friends if they're the people you've been in school with for a while and you've lived for a while, and the idea of being ripped away from all of that to go to a new place is quite depressing.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Yeah, but, you know, considering the kind of stuff that happens to kids, I've had a very lucky life. And
well, you've lived just a fantastic life with all the different things you've done. Now, you're a graduate of Yale University.
I am, yes, sir, Yale College.
Well, yeah, Sharon and I had decided that with my bachelor's degree from San Jose State University, I wouldn't say much about that because I know you'd be embarrassed just going to a little school like Yale. But
right, well, I have more students at San Jose State, for sure.
That is for sure.
Let me ask you
a few questions
sure.
about your book.
First of all, I love the book.
Thank you so much. It was a page-turner.
I told you just a few minutes ago that I had circled the lessons I wanted to read before you came here today, and I couldn't do it that way. I had to just keep reading one consecutive lesson after another.
It's a wonderful thing to tell an author.
And I'm not even kidding.
I told you should say that to him.
Right, right.
What were your goals in writing Right Turns?
Basically, to lay out the 35 lessons that are the very essence of the book, the 35 lessons that explain my own right turns, because I do think they speak for a lot of people. One of the things that strikes me is that there's been so much attention to the term neocon during the Bush administration. Bush and a lot of his advisors are all called neocons. What I'm writing about in this book is a different phenomenon. It's a phenomenon of the theocons, people like me and like literally millions of other people, including the President of the United States, for whom a more conservative political outlook is directly connected to a more intense religious commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And in my case, the religious commitment was a Jewish religious commitment. But I think that one of the things that you see is that the heart and soul of the conservative movement today tends to be people who have embraced mostly Christian faith.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it's such a good thing for the United States. One of the lessons that I talk about that I know is it's already controversial. One of the lessons that I write about is a lesson that a more Christian America mm-hmm. is good for the Jews.
Yes.
And that's something I believe with all my heart.
Well, that's very interesting because I converted to Christianity from a Jewish background. And it's interesting. I have a brother who's only 2 years younger than me. He's planning on moving his whole family out to Israel. His daughters mm-hmm. have already obtained Aliyah. And we used to get into the most bitter arguments about whether Jesus was the Messiah. That has changed, not over that subject. We would still argue about that. But it doesn't come up as much because Jewish people, my brother included, are waking up and realizing that right now evangelical Christians are the best friends they have.
Well, absolutely. And it goes far beyond Israel. It involves the United States. The main reason I think that a more Christian America is good for the Jews is because a more Christian America is good for America. Every single problem that you could name, whether it's education, whether it's hard work, whether it's the stability of the family, whether it's crime, whatever domestic problem you could mention is a problem that Christian commitment helps to solve.
Yes.
It's not a magic pill. I mean, there's a bumper sticker that I like that I've seen out there. You've probably seen it, too. It says Christians aren't perfect, just forgiven.
Just forgiven. That's right.
But at least trying. And you see, that's the difference, I think, between a lot of people who reject God and people who are trying to get closer to God, is the desire, at least, to do the right thing.
What was it that first made you personally realize that Christianity is a friend to the Jews rather than an enemy? Was there a theophany or a crisis experience you went through?
It's not exactly a crisis experience. I talk about it in the book, and there's an interesting story aside from the book that I'll tell you about it. I was living in Berkeley, and I've often said my 4 years in Berkeley were three of the happiest days of my life. Berkeley's a very bizarre place, and I quote, there's a famous poem about the death of William Butler Yeats, and the poem's by W.H. Auden, and he says, "Mad Ireland hurt him into poetry." Well, mad Berkeley hurt me into conservatism.
Berserkly.
I mean, yeah, berserkly. It was completely crazy. I only lived there 4 years. But it was those 4 years that I really flipped both religiously and politically from being sort of a secular liberal activist punk to being the conservative curmudgeon that I am today. And part of that was, and this is by chance, right? But of course, religious people believe nothing is by chance. There is no coincidence.
You know
there is a Christian couple living upstairs, and I'll talk about them in a minute.
Okay, right after the break, we will hear about that Christian couple, and we will be right back. 1-800-556-1210 if you have a question for Michael Medved.
KPRZ, San Diego.
Admit it, to be successful these days, you need a website. And if you don't have one, you'll be like my friend Arnold, who finally switched from a manual to an electric typewriter when everyone else already had a personal computer. And the day I tried to talk him into a website, just listen in.
Forget it, too expensive.
Then how are you going to market your company? People need information.
There's still a device called a telephone.
Telephone? You're talking like Fred Flintstone. How are they going to see your logo, your graphics and pictures, your store?
There's a lovely brochure that we send out.
Have you any idea how much money you spend every year to print these brochures?
Yeah, right. How about the cost of having your website hosted? Not to mention the time, the complicated software, the hiring of a designer.
All of those difficulties are removed when you use Web Studio.
That name sounds familiar.
Web Studio is a website design software. It enables you to create your own pages in minutes without hiring a designer. All you do is use your mouse to drag and drop images and text. Then it saves the pages for you on the internet. The program includes 14 design galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and anything else you need.
I didn't know it could be so easy and quick. Maybe it is time for me to step into the 20th century.
Arnold, it's the 21st century. For information on Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
And we're back. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Cashard, and we couldn't be happier today because our favorite talk show host nationally, Mr. Michael Medved, has graced us with his presence. He was in the middle of a story from Berkeley. The first time I set foot on Berkeley's campus, somebody was selling land on the moon in a silver suit. And what puzzled me is that nobody in the audience looked puzzled.
No, not at all. Look, Berkeley's a very strange place. And I honestly believe that I know there are a lot of parents who worry about sending their kids up there to go to school. I think if you want your kids to come out as straight arrows and conservatives, it's probably not a bad place to send them. Because I think generally the left looks bad, but the left looks truly disgusting in Berkeley, California. And in any event, that was part of my experience. I had just begun sort of experimenting with Sabbath observance, sort of reconnecting to traditions of daily prayer and to Jewish religious traditions that hadn't been followed in my family for a generation. And at the time, I was living in a flat. And upstairs was this couple who arrived after I had moved in called Doug and Debbie Krieger. And they had been sent to Berkeley to plant a church. And they had the church in Berkeley. Now, their church was about six other people. It was tiny. And morning and night, you would hear them praying, and they'd be saying, "Oh, Lord Jesus." And initially, it was kind of annoying because it would be very loud. And you would just kind of hear it. But they were such nice people. And they were so kind. And they contrasted so spectacularly well with all of the jerks and the leftists. And I went through a burglary up there. There's this old saying by Irving Kristol that a neoconservative is a liberal who's been mugged by reality. I wasn't mugged by reality. I was actually burglarized by a real-life burglar.
Wonderful.
And Doug and Debbie were so helpful to me. Now, one of the interesting things is doing my book, Right Turns, I wanted to connect with them. And they are still in California. I think they've moved on to Sacramento. They have a ministry and... They just were just absolutely swell people, and it changed my impression, because you hear in the media, if you don't have personal contact with believing Christians, oh, conservative Christians, they don't respect you, they're going to be mean to you, they're going to say you roast in hell, they're going to they're terribly.
If they pray today, the Gestapo will be at your door tomorrow.
Well, that's it. And my first glimpse that this wasn't the case was this one wonderful couple. And it sends a lesson, which, of course, is how much you may not even know what difference you're making in somebody's life by taking a walk with God.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you have a question for Mr. Medved, it's 1-800-556-1210. And Mark from Carmel Valley, you're on the Bob Siegel Show with Michael Medved.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
You betcha.
Hey, and I'm actually a friend of Bob's. We share a Thursday movie night together.
You see, Sharon,
oh, really? Wow.
You
do have a friend.
Sharon,
a Thursday movie night. Now, do you go to new movies on Thursday nights?
This is a ministry to Mark. He wants people to know that Christians aren't a bunch of stuffed shirts who do nothing but say Jesus Lord all day long.
Right.
Yeah, we actually used to go to movies, but now that I have a family, we kind of hang out inside. And DVD has certainly helped a lot with that. Because it's easy to rent a DVD and watch a movie now. So.
Sure. What have you seen recently that you thought was great?
Boy, let's see. Actually, I just watched Stargate last night, which I recorded. But
Mark, I don't think Stargate was that great. By the look on Michael Medved's
face.
Well,
it's just a sort of an interesting theology there. I mean, I'm sure that the semiotics of Stargate would make a very interesting PhD dissertation.
I thought the first 30 minutes were great, and then I thought the whole thing just fell apart.
Yeah. It features that guy whose name I now forget from The Crying Game.
Yeah, I don't know his name either, but that's like one of the only two movies he made.
Right. Right.
Yeah, but actually, I did call in with a movie question.
Go.
And it tends towards Christianity. And this, the Matrix movies are something I really like, and I feel that they have a really strong Christian theme, especially the first movie. Neo is a Christ figure, in my opinion. And now I grew up as a big fan of science fiction, and I read science fiction when I was younger. But most science fiction books actually completely ignore the concept of the Judeo-Christian God.
Right. Now, look, obviously the Matrix movies, you're absolutely right. I mean, the idea that somebody's named Trinity is kind of an indication when there are three characters. You've got Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. But I think that it's insulting to Christianity, frankly. I despised all three Matrix movies. I know it's common to despise the last one. But I think they all stank up the joint, and they're pretentious and full of kind of random symbolism that doesn't add up to anything. And that's the problem. I think the Star Wars movies, you can say that there is a symbolism and a resonance and a connection with cultural archetypes that actually means something. The Matrix movies, aside from the horrific performances by people who can't act worth a darn, some spit and nifty special effects, but I think it's a very, very big stretch to find religious meanings in Matrix.
How about if I throw out a couple other movies?
Sure.
Since that one failed miserably.
Well, it doesn't fail. It didn't fail. It made a lot of money. I just think it fails artistically.
Okay, a couple other movies. More modern movies. 12 Monkeys, Blade Runner, both written by David Webb Peoples.
Right.
Clockwork Orange, even, I think, is one of, in my opinion, is probably the best.
Oh, boy,
Christian
we're on KPRZ, and someone just admitted they watch Clockwork Orange.
Yeah, well, not just that. 12 Monkeys is worse. I mean, I despise 12 Monkeys. I like Blade Runner a great deal. I think that Blade Runner is an interesting movie with all kinds of interesting religious resonance.
And what about Clockwork Orange? Are you a Stanley Kubrick fan?
I am not. Stanley lost me after Paths of Glory. I think Paths of Glory is one of the greatest films ever made. I think the rest of it, very much including the 2001 Space Oddity, is just hugely overrated stuff. You know, one of the things I write about the 60s that was so pathetic, and I write about this a great deal in Right Turns. You remember all this stuff? I don't know if you're old enough, Bob. But
boy, that's a compliment.
Where people would say, okay, I'm going to go out and see 2001 for the ninth time, but you got to get really stoned.
Yes.
And any movie where the saying is that you have to be stoned in order to appreciate it, I think is not a first-rate work of art.
What I did like about 2001, though, was something that Arthur C. Clarke wrote in the novel version when they were trying to explain that we couldn't have just evolved by randomness and chance. And he says we're giving this science fiction explanation, but he says the truth, when we discover it someday, will be even more interesting. And I thought they were at least paying homage to the idea that things don't just happen by randomness and chance.
No, absolutely. It is a very interesting movie, and it has very brilliant elements. Nearly all of Kubrick's films have brilliant elements, except for Eyes Wide Shut. You didn't see that one, did you?
Yes, I did.
Oh, no.
You're admitting that,
you're really
Mark? Are you really a friend of Bob's?
Right.
Well, you know, I'm with Mr. Medved on 12 Monkeys. In the interest of full disclosure, I did like Stanley Kubrick's other films. Well, he didn't do 12 Monkeys anyway. But you know what, Mark? We have a bunch of other callers, so lest we get in more trouble here, we're going to get you off the air real fast. Thank you for calling in.
Thanks, Mark. Great to talk to you.
Bye-bye. And you're on the air on the Bob Siegel Show.
Oh, that's great. Hi, Bob. It's Lise.
Hi, Lise. How are you today?
Oh, I'm very well. Thank you. And, Michael, I have to tell you, I listen to your show every day at work, and I just really appreciate your standing up for values that I believe in.
Well, thank you very much.
I have to tell you what I really appreciate about you is how you stand up for Christians, especially through the Christmas season. I just really appreciated how you stood up for our beliefs, too, even though you're Jewish. And I just really, really appreciated that. You spoke my mind many times. Well, I have a question, because one thing I appreciate your show is how you seem to feel our pain, and yet you're Jewish. And I had a question that I was thinking, if I actually knew the answer to this, it might help bridge the gap between me and my Jewish friends. And when a born-again Christian talks to a person who's Jewish, we believe we're talking about the same God. But does a Jewish person consider the reverse to be true?
I think so. Nearly all of us do. Here's the problem that you have to be aware of.
Yes.
Among Christians, there are people, if you say you're a Christian, it means you believe in God. It means you are somebody who's at least trying to get to know God through
Christ.
Hold on.
We're also going to have to be somebody who lets our sponsors take a break. But hold on over the break with us, Lise, because Mr. Medved's here to answer your question.
And a great question it is. We'll be right back.
We will be right back. Bob Siegel. With the wiring in your home, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. For all you know, he may have gotten his license by sending in three serial box tops.
Hey, these things happen. There's nothing wrong with my wiring.
Houses burned down.
You wanted a guarantee? You should have ordered the deluxe package.
Folks, play it smart. Call WNS Electric Incorporated. They specialize in contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, WNS takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I use them myself, and I wouldn't call anyone else. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for WNS Electric. License number 480539. WNS.
APRZ, 1210 AM, San Diego's Family Station.
And we're back. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Cashard. We couldn't be happier because we are with our absolute favorite talk show host, Michael Medved, and he was talking to Lise. And Lise, you're back on the air.
Yeah, and Lise asked a great question, I thought, which is when she's talking to her Jewish friends, do they feel that they are praying to the same God as you are, Lise, right? That's your question.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, here's the thing you have to understand. A lot of American Jews, people who describe themselves as Jews, are agnostic or even atheist. And one of the statistics that has stuck in mind with me, and it's something I write about in my book, Right Turns, is that among Christians in America, generally between 40% and 50% of Christians go to church every week. The percentage of American Jews who go to synagogue every week is about 8%.
Hmm.
And we are just much less religiously involved and committed. And even a lot of people who would go to what they, what Reform Judaism, see, you hear Reform Church and Christianity, would be very conservative. Reform Judaism is very, very liberal, and in fact would probably be borderline agnostic. There are lots and lots of Reform Jews who will tell you they don't really believe in God, or they aren't sure, or it's not really there. So I think that that would be the one thing that I would say. For Jewish people who are convinced that God exists and rules the world and has known everything and preordained everything since the beginning of time, which is a Jewish teaching, those people would say, sure, you're praying. And in fact, a great sage of the 11th century, Moses Maimonides, that all Jews revere, said specifically that Christianity was a means that a wider arena of people got to know the true God.
Would you agree, Michael, that the idea of Jesus not just being the Messiah, but being God incarnate to an Orthodox Jew, at least, can sound rather puzzling and troubling?
Absolutely.
I've had Jews tell me, well, then you're worshiping an idol, because how can God be a man? Of course, we're talking about an incarnation of God. We're not saying that that's what
God originally looks like. That's the breakdown.
Yes.
That's really a very good friend of mine, a wonderful guy named David Klinghoffer, just finished a book called Why the Jews Rejected Jesus, The Turning Point in Western History. And that's exactly the point, is it was that issue. Not even the messiahship of Jesus, but Jesus as God.
Yeah.
That is most difficult for Jews.
Absolutely. For an ancient Jew to claim he was the God of the universe is the most outrageous thing he could say, unless by chance he was telling the truth. But there's going to be disagreement on that. Lise, what a wonderful question. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thank you.
And Diane, you're on the Bob Siegel Show with Michael Medved.
I think it's somebody else.
Okay. You're on the Bob Siegel Show with Michael Medved.
Hi, this is Diane. Am I on?
Okay, well, it is Diane after all. Yes, you're on the Bob Siegel Show.
Okay, great. Well, thank you for taking my call. I am a fan of both the Bob Siegel Show and the Michael Medved Show.
Well, thank you.
I didn't listen to the radio at all until I discovered Dennis Prager and Michael Medved, and, of course, now Bob Siegel. So I'm one of those radio zealots now, listening almost every day.
Well, bless you. Thank you.
So thank you. I wanted to comment, Michael, on something that you said that on one of your shows that really struck me, and I wanted to ask you if you would talk a little bit more. You said that the cause of democracy in the world is largely dependent upon the success of Christianity in America. Could you talk a little bit on that?
You bet, because basically the cause of values in America is dependent on the cause of Christianity. Judaism is obviously very important to me, but we're 2.4% of the American population. Even if every single Jewish person became faithful to our tradition and our heritage, it would be a wonderful thing. But it's not going to move America the way America will be moved when every single Christian embraces Christianity and Christian values. And in terms of the cause of democracy, democracy depends. I thought President Bush said it so well in his inauguration address. Self-government depends upon government of the self. And basically, Christianity is sending that message today. Secularism is sending the opposite message. It all comes down to that struggle between follow your heart and do your duty. And the main voices for saying do your duty in America right now are Christian voices. And I don't think it's a mistake that so many of the heroic young people who are out defending our country right now in Afghanistan and Iraq and around the world are people with a profound Christian commitment.
You know, we always think of the gospel as delivering people from sins that they've committed, but part of the gospel, and this goes back to the Jewish idea of Messiah, was being delivered from sins committed against them, whether it's the tyranny of Rome, the tyranny of a dysfunctional household, or just the tyranny of some two-bit despot dictator in the world. A wonderful question, Diane. Thank you so much for calling in.
You're welcome.
And we have Charlotte. You're on the Bob Siegel Show with Michael Medved.
Hi there, Bob. Michael.
Hi.
Actually, I had a question about demons. And
demons?
Yeah. So I know that it's one of those...
That might be out of the domain of Michael's book. I don't think
actually, there's a section.
There's a section of, hit the jackpot.
There is. Go ahead with your question. I'm sorry.
Do demons do evil because that's what Satan, as their king, you know, teaches is, like, what's better, or and that's just the way it is? Or do they know that they're the epitome of evil and they've, like, take pleasure in the destruction of human hearts and souls?
Okay, Judaism would be unclear as to which of those two is true, but they both could be. Mm-hmm. And certainly the existence of demons, who are called shadim in Jewish scriptural sources, mm-hmm. Is real. I mean, it is a real factor. Now, I mentioned in my book, one of the things that a lot of people don't know about me, but they'll find out by reading Right Turns, is when I was in college, I hitchhiked 82,000 miles.
My goodness.
And in the midst of one of those trips, and I tell this story, I ended up, because we were stuck in the cold and in the middle of the night in central Pennsylvania, we got let off not too far from the battlefield at Gettysburg. And I said to my buddy, let's go hike over to Gettysburg and sleep on the battlefield. Now, there are all these signs that say camping on the battlefield is illegal.
Yeah.
We camped on the battlefield at Gettysburg, and I've never, ever had any experience vaguely like that. There was something there, and it wasn't good. And we saw shadowy figures, and we heard clanking metal, and it was two of us. It was not my imagination. We had drunk nothing. I mean, it was. These are two sober young guys. I was in college at the time. But when you think about it, there are 50,000 extraordinary young Americans who, on both sides, who sacrificed their lives on that ground. And being there at 4 in the morning right before dawn, I've never been so glad for the sun to come up. And yeah. it was terrifying.
So best guess, Michael, were they Confederate spirits or Yankee spirits?
unclear, but the shadows were gray. I mean, my guess would be... Because there were voices. Normally, if somebody told me something like this on the radio, I'd say, yeah. You know, you've too much beer. But there was nothing like that here. And this was absolutely real, and we both experienced it, and it scared the wits out of me. Part of the reason was before I believed in God.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the big problems, Stephen King is a good illustration to me. How can people believe in demons and the devil and the dark side
without
believing
side.
In the light side?
Because yeah.
Otherwise you're going to end up killing yourself. Because if you don't believe in the light side to rescue humanity.
Great point.
Well, it's such a shadowy area, and there's so much of it. You don't really want to get into it because it's real, but so much of it, you don't know what is what, and there's a little too much of that, like, people delving into that here on Earth, and I think that's definitely something that you want to stay away from. Cause
yeah. Well, that would be the Jewish approach, by the way.
But not stay away in an ignorant way. Stay away in the sense that we don't need to become fascinated with the supernatural in its own right. The Christian view, of course, would be that these demons are fallen angels. And to answer your initial question, Charlotte, the deception is something that the demons are aware of, and it's a joint deception toward human beings to give them alternative supernatural experiences to God. We'll probably do a whole show on this sometime. Thank you so much for that wonderful question.
Thank you for answering.
God bless. And, boy, that was well timed, because we're about to take not just a break. It sounds like an Irish break. We will be right back. 1-800-556-1210.
KPRZ. Change your station. Change your life. How many times have you heard the phrase, "they're all the same," applied to local contractors? It is unfortunate that a few can tarnish the reputations of many, but it sure is nice when you find a contractor with godly principles. But what if they only do floors or only the painting? What if you want to build a whole new home, or you want someone to fully complete your remodel or tenant improvements? You need ProBuilt. Serving San Diego since 1987, residential and commercial, quality work, completed on time. Local Christian businessman and president of ProBuilt, Jim Bell, said, "When people pay you to do a job, they simply want you to do the job. They expect quality work, and they expect it to be done on time. We do that at ProBuilt." For references and dozens of pictures of both residential and commercial work, visit our website, ProBuiltInc.com. That's ProBuiltInc.com. Or call our El Cajon office at 619-593-2965. We're fully bonded and insured. California State License Number 567925. ProBuilt.
We're back. This is Bob Siegel, Sharon Cachard, and far more importantly, the one and only Michael Medved. And you're on the Bob Siegel Show with Michael Medved.
I'll bet somebody's there, no?
And you're on the Bob Siegel Show with Michael Medved.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, Bob. This is Jim.
Hey, Jim.
How you doing?
Good. We're just glad someone was out there.
I did. I didn't hear my name, so
no problem.
Prematurely speak out of turn. So, hi, Michael. It's such a pleasure to talk to you today.
Well, thank you, Jim.
Great. I just purchased your book, and I haven't had the pleasure yet to read it, but I did want to ask you a question.
By the way, if you bring the book over to the Jewish Community Center between 6:30 and 9 tonight in La Jolla, I'd be glad to sign it for you.
Oh, yeah. I'm definitely planning on coming. That's going to be great. This may be something you've touched on in your book, but I was curious about your faith in God, which you briefly touched on earlier in the program.
Sure.
I was hoping you could expand on it. Now, the book kind of talks about your switch or conversion, so to speak, from a liberal worldview to a more conservative worldview, and that evolution, how that took place. I was curious about you being a believer in God and a follower of Judaism, how that played into that, how much that caused that change, and also, were you a believer in God when you were in your liberal days? And if not, how did that process take place?
That's great questions. Just to give you the brief answer, sort of the Cliff Notes answer. No, when I was a liberal, I didn't think about God. I mean, I certainly didn't follow any Jewish practices. I would work on all the Jewish holidays. Occasionally, I'd come home for Passover, but I'd work on Yom Kippur and. It was just not something I would think about,
uh-huh.
and God was not something that was in my mind or that I was interested in. And I go through some detail in the book, as you'll see, about sort of the baby steps that led me in more of a godly and more of a Jewish direction in my case. And a lot of that had to do with my relationship with my parents and really seeing that despite the fact that my parents would have identified themselves as secular people, they really did have a core of faith which they were able to some extent to pass on to me. And see, this is one of the areas in which I think Judaism and Christianity are very different. In Judaism, the model for greater religiosity is to go from the action to changing your heart, changing your action, changing the way you behave, to then changing your heart. In Christianity, of course, you're depending on the Lord to change your heart, and that will lead to a change in your actions. And for me, I mean, I was, when I started keeping the Sabbath, when I started keeping kosher, I wasn't sure God existed. But when I came to see how much all of the aspects of the law enriched my life, uplifted my life, made me feel better and be better and do better, live better, I sort of reached the conclusion that this whole system had not been laid out by some self-help author somewhere, or maybe by the ultimate self-help author. Does that answer your question a little bit?
I think we lost him.
Oh.
Well, I guess that did answer his question. Okay. And, Michael, you're on the Bob Siegel Show with Michael Medved.
Yeah, hi, Bob. Hi, Michael. How you doing?
Very well, Michael. Great
and
to talk
Karen,
to you.
All of you. Really enjoying the show.
Well, thank
and,
you.
All of you, indeed. You know, and I want to thank you, Michael Medved, for, you know, saying what you mean, meaning what you say, taking a stand, being fair-minded, and being honest with your point of view. And I'm also one of your legion of fans out here.
No, thank you.
And Bob, I'd say the same for you as well. So
thank you very much.
There you go. You know, and there's so much I'd like to ask you, but I'm going to, you know, before I get there, I'm gonna put you on the hot seat, I think, or maybe not, Michael. But in either event, I'd love to hear your comments about the, I call it the conspicuous silence from Hollywood, about the horrible November religious murder of film director Theo Van Gogh. No protest, no outrage, and it's, I found that kind of extraordinary.
Oh, look, if there's a bigger conspicuous silence from Hollywood. I mean, if you're in Hollywood, and I used to work, I tell in my book, Right Turns, I tell about working as a screenwriter before I started working as a film critic. And one thing you learn as a screenwriter is the most precious thing you're looking for, even more precious than a great hero, is a great villain. And right now, there are great villains in this world, and you would think they would inspire villains in movies. But the only movie, the only one since September 11th, 2001, that focuses on Islamic terrorists as villains is that stupid movie Team America, which is with puppets, and it's a comedy. You would think that there would be some focus on this threat to civilization as we know it, which is Islamo-fascist terror, but they won't touch it.
It seems that post 9/11, Islam came out smelling like a rose. Would you agree to that?
No, it's disgusting. And you know what? It's the spinelessness. Part of it is involved with, now this is going to get me in a world of trouble, but, you know, gentleman was saying, I speak the truth, and I'm going to try to right here. Part of the problem is that so many people in Hollywood, not the majority, but many people are of Jewish background. And they are terribly afraid of all of this propaganda coming out of the Arab world that says that Hollywood is an agent of Zionist information and propaganda, and it's all Zionist, Zionist, Zionist. So they worry that if they create an Islamic terrorist on screen, that they'll be accused of Zionist propaganda and they'll lose business and this and that. But the truth of the matter is, right now, most of the terrorists, nearly all the terrorists in the world, are Islamic. And to give people a pass to never see that on screen, to never speak out against the desecration of freedom of speech that he's talking about in Netherlands is outrageous.
It's like nobody wants to stand up and say the emperor isn't wearing any clothes.
Yeah,
right.
Great. Well, great response, and thank you for that. You know, here, I'm sure that Right Turns is a great read. This is the second part, and this is where I'm going to, if I put you on the hot seat a little bit, know that I love you.
I'll take it.
I look forward to reading, you know, Right Turns. But I think there may be two questions you might not have addressed, and I'd be interested to hear what you have to say. Number one is, who is Jesus Christ to you? And number two, which is somewhat connected, imagine you're dead. After you died, you're standing in front of God, and we're talking about the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he asks you, Michael, why should I let you in my heaven? What would you say?
Well, just so you all know, I don't see Mr. Medved sweating at all. I think the fact that an evangelical Christian asked him that question is something he might have been prepared for. Go ahead, Michael.
Sure. First of all, I don't take that question as hostile at all, because one of the things I do say in the book is that when my Christian friends and acquaintances try to witness to me, I don't take that as a sign of hostility. I take it as a sign of love.
Mm-hmm.
So putting that aside for
loving.
A moment, who is Jesus Christ to me? Jesus Christ is the rabbi that God sent to the earth to help spread the word of his existence to the entire world. I think it is completely absurd for someone to think that something as big as Christianity, with 2 billion people, that has changed civilization enormously for the better, on balance, it is ridiculous for someone to think that this is something that happened by accident. If you believe that God controls the universe, God wanted this to happen. Now, do I believe that Jesus Christ is God? I do not, because if I did, I'd be a Christian, and I'm a Jew. And that goes to the very core of what you're asking. I believe that God wants me to be Jewish. I believe he wants me to be part of his original Abrahamic covenant. And I believe he wants me to continue not to be part of the body of Christ, which is much, much broader existence than the existence of the Jewish people, but that my destiny, if you will, what God has picked out for me, is to be part of this people, which has had a long-standing argument with God and has done some amazing things in my own time. Now, by the way, that means that I feel perfectly comfortable with someone like Bob, who is of Jewish background but is now a Christian. The only area where I find discomfort in the kind of questions you're raising are with people who call themselves Messianic Jews. Because if you're a follower of Jesus Christ, you're not Jewish, you're Christian.
Well, now, as one who does not call himself a Messianic
right.
Jew, because I have that problem myself, actually, we're having not a problem, but another one of those wonderful commercial breaks, so we will return to this ever-increasingly stimulating discussion with the one and only Michael Medved. We will be right back.
APRZ, 1210 AM. Talk radio you can trust.
Looking to build your own website without a lot of cost and trouble? Hi, I'm Bob Siegel, here to tell you about Web Studio. Web Studio allows people to create their own website simply and easily without knowing HTML. With Web Studio, you avoid the learning curve of front page and the expense of a web designer. Web Studio has 14 different galleries that contain graphics, sounds, and everything else you need. For more information about Web Studio, go to webstudio.com.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
We're back. This is Bob Siegel, Sharon Cashard, and Michael Medved. The question I was going to ask, Michael, and let me say, I believe that people like you and Dennis Prager are doing more for the kingdom of God than a lot of Christians. So I want to say that first. Just hypothetically, with no emotion invested in this at all, hypothetically, if Jesus were the Messiah, even putting aside whether he's God or not God, if he were the Messiah, would a Jew cease to be Jewish for believing him to be the Messiah? Or would the phrase Messianic Jew makes sense in that regard? And again, I don't even like that phrase, so I don't use it. I'm honestly asking this.
The reason I don't like the phrase is because it's misleading.
Misleading and deceptive.
And it's, in a way, what it does is it insults both Christianity and Judaism. It insults Christianity because if Christianity means anything, it means that you follow Jesus.
Right.
And if you follow Jesus, you're a Christian. And it insults Judaism because it suggests that we are somehow a fossil religion, that we are not a religious faith that has a very well-developed answers to some important questions.
Right.
And let me go back to the other question, that because I don't want to dodge it. The gentleman had asked, what do I say to God about why should I get into heaven? Our tradition is different from Christian tradition, and you know this very well,
yes.
Bob. Our tradition teaches that that all good people, people who lead an uplifting life, who develop some spiritual side to their life, have a chelek, have a share, a portion in the world to come, that the soul is eternal, that it is actually, in other words, it's not unusual to be, quote, saved in Christian terms, to have eternal life. What is unusual is to be damned, is to find punishment and to be cut off.
Right. Now, would you agree that when the Bible's in the Old Testament, or what you would call the Holy
right.
Scriptures, called a man righteous, that still included that there was a day of atonement, there were animal sacrifices, that kind of had a built-in system of understanding sin and forgiveness, and if somebody was at least true within that check and balance system, they were called righteous for that reason, correct? They weren't living actually
a perfect
life.
No, because this is one of those things where, and I know you have a brother who's seriously Jewish, and I'm sure you have interesting conversations with him. That whole focus on that function of the sacrificial system would be more typical of Christianity than of Judaism. In other words, yes, the sacrifices were important, but there were five different classifications of sacrifices. Only one of them was a guilt sacrifice.
Yes,
right?
Yes. But what I guess my point would not be so much the sacrifices themselves as much as the idea that the ancient Jews were not calling themselves perfect, sinless human beings.
Oh, absolutely not.
Yeah, that's my
main
point.
But not all atonement would involve sacrifices.
That's
in
right.
other words, even while the temple was standing. I was just in Israel with 150 listeners. And one of the things we went to is we went to a synagogue that had been built about a couple hundred years before the temple was destroyed. And people still went to synagogues. And we pray for forgiveness from God three times a day. Slach lanu avinu, forgive us, our Father, because we have sinned. And that's something the Jews are conscious of. But it's not something that we feel that we're denied forgiveness today because we can't sacrifice a bull.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how many Christians say this. Maybe it's not said often enough. I will say this. I believe that the concept of anybody being damned to hell includes understanding. I believe that if a person reaches a point where they know or strongly suspect that Jesus is real and they push him away because they'd rather live a life of sin, that person's going to have some trouble on Judgment Day. Somebody who honestly, sincerely feels different, I of course believe Jesus still died for that person, but I believe that that kind of sincerity may be taken into account. So I'm going to say that I don't really know exactly what God might do with Mr. Medved. I'd probably let him in, but
I'm
not running the universe and that God is.
It's one of those things where I am comfortable enough trying to lead the right life in this life. And I do believe the teachings of my tradition in terms of the world to come. Now, and again, obviously, if I'm wrong about that, that's a very bad bet. But I'm sure that most people out there listening think I am. But that's all right.
Fortunately, we serve a God that looks at the heart and the motives. He's not Monty Hall. You lost salvation, but we have lovely luggage for you. And look at this new rotisserie. So, anyway.
What's behind door number two?
Well, Michael, that was a wonderful question. I don't think we have enough time to do justice to another caller, but I'm going to try it anyway, bold person that I am. And Cole, you're on the Bob Siegel Show with Michael Medved.
Hey, Bobby, Michael, great show.
Thank you.
A quick question, Michael, about your book, Right Turns, or perhaps more accurately, the process that brought you to it. And I've heard you talk about it, your change from a liberal to I guess what we could call a conservative today. My question was...
Guess what, Cole? I'm hearing the music.
Okay.
Why don't you call in next week? I'll tell you what I think Michael Medved might have said.
Come out to La Jolla at the Jewish Community Center, 6:30 to 9. I'll be there, and I'd be glad to answer all questions coming up tonight.
4126 Executive Drive.
We'll see you next week, folks. You're always welcome.
The Bob Siegel Show was brought to you in part by ProBuild, Primetime Advertising Corporation, Web Studio, WFS Electric Incorporated, and the law offices of Matthew Simone. If you're interested in donating to this radio ministry, check out our website at www.bobsiegel.net. www.bobsiegel.net. Here, you can read Bob's article and learn how to obtain Bob's book. On our website, you'll also learn about a special offer from Web Studio. For monthly donations of $20 or more to Bob's ministry, we'll give you a complimentary copy of Web Studio, a $90 value. That's Bob Siegel, SIEGEL.net. We appreciate your prayers and support, and we look forward to getting together with you again next week. Thank you for listening to The Bob Siegel Show. The views and opinions are solely those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily represent KPRZ or its sponsors.